You're tuned to A Closer Look. I'm Rose Scott alongside Dennis O'Hara. Thanks for joining us. Dennis, I hope we have clearance and copyright clearance on that song we just played.
Oh, we're making it up as we go along.
Well, pop idol Taylor Swift is not necessarily someone whose words you'd expect to be reading in the Wall Street Journal. But last summer, Dennis, she contributed an opinion piece that got plenty of notice on Wall Street and beyond. She explained why she was pulling her collection of songs from Spotify. Now, that's the music streaming service. And she emphasized the need for fair payment to songwriters and other artists.
Well, today we're joined by Georgia Republican Congressman Doug Collins, who represents the 9th District of Georgia. That's up in Northeast Georgia, Hall, Fannin, Gilmer, and Rabun counties, among other places. He's introduced a new version of the Songwriter Equity Act. We'll take a look at the complicated system, question of who should be paid and for how much for original material, like a Taylor Swift song. And we'll also, of course, get into the House Budget Committee proposed budget for the next fiscal year, which made big news yesterday. Congressman Collins, good to have you.
Dennis, good to be with you. And Rose as well.
Yeah, thank you, Congressman.
Explain just a little bit. We've had so many versions of this bill before. What does this one do, and was it a direct response to what Taylor Swift did with Spotify?
Well, no, it's not in direct response to Taylor. In fact, there's never been another version of the Songwriter Equity Act except the one we introduced last session. There's been many other versions out there dealing with terrestrial radio rights, performance rights, those kind of things. But what we're dealing with in the Songwriter Equity Act is dealing mainly with how songwriters, publishers, and artists, if they are a songwriter, get paid not only from just the digital streaming aspect, which is what Taylor was emphasizing, but also from the mechanical rights, which frankly are well over 100 years old. They came in, some of these set payments came in actually when we were dealing with that, really big concern monopoly giant called Player Pianos. So that's where all this came from. And really, it's very simple to understand. There's three ways that the songwriters and publishers and all get paid. Three and only three different ways. Two of which the government have their thumb involved in how they get paid or setting rates or which royalty board or what evidence they can use. And then one in which they can directly negotiate for fair market value of their product. It's no surprise that it's only that way in which there is at least some reasonable expectation of fair pay. So what we're simply saying, a very conservative idea, is, as a matter of fact, is saying it's time to get the government out of this. This is a new environment. We need to look ahead to the next 20 to 30 years of songwriting and music and how we listen to music and how the artists are paid for their original material.
Well, Congressman Collins, let me ask you this. Is this also, do you think maybe this is a movement toward possibly overhauling the entire Copyright Act, or is this just sort of a smaller amendment, if you will, to it, or do you want to keep those separate? Because I think some people get confused when they hear, well, we're talking about trademarks and copyright and songwriters and who owns what. What are we talking about here?
Well, that's a great question, and I think the overall answer is we're in the process, and I serve on the House Judiciary Committee and also the Vice Chair of the Intellectual Property Subcommittee, which has a large expanse. But one of the issues that Chairman Goodlatte said last Congress that he wanted to deal with was a review and updating of the Copyright Act, which encompasses a lot of different things. But the music licensing piece in this area is probably the most high profile, if you would. It's one that more people deal with, and it's because of issues like Taylor Swift, but also the issues that songwriters have been dealing with for a while. So it's a part of the overall Copyright Act. If we were to do a complete copyright overhaul, then this would, of course, be part of that. But there is parts of this that people, and especially the industry, the music industry and others, have looked at that could also be moved as standalone piece of legislation. My bill has a companion piece. The Senate introduced the companion legislation, and Senator Orrin Hatch did that in the Senate. So this is something that can be looked at as standalone, but more than likely will be part of a bigger look at this whole system.
And how much does, obviously, the advancement of technology, because I imagine those streaming services such as Spotify, Pandora, they're probably not in favor of this.
Well, I think what is interesting is, of course, if you're looking at something that interferes with the business model that you're currently used to dealing with or how they actually, came about, of course, there's concern. The good part about it is our office has maintained conversations, although we may disagree on specifics. The digital services, the Pandoras, the Spotifys, and are looking ahead, and they know that I think there's a realization that in some of their areas that the model that is out there, it makes it very unsustainable for songwriters or artists, for that matter, to be a part. To give an example, I mean, a person who writes a number one song or has several number one, which they have penned, can get millions, literally millions of streamings or downloads on a YouTube or a Pandora or a Spotify, and literally make only $50-$60 out of literally millions of views or listens. I think when you look at that, it's just becoming obvious that this is a business model that, you know, frankly, is being propped up by the government. The government has its hand in it. And these are industries or disruptive technologies that have grown and everyone uses them. But I think for the long-term aspect of how government should interact, given the fact of looking at a new copyright system, this is something that I think we're all going to try and find a workable solution to.
Two-part question on that, Congressman. Are we going to see, if this passes, people have to somehow, as we saw with Pandora, people ending up having to pay more to access entertainment content that everybody likes to use and would love to use for free? And secondly, what about the record labels? I mean, they are really struggling now. Would this mean less for them if it passes through?
No, I think one of the things is to understand completely is this bill, there's nothing in this bill says that a song for a particular song will get paid more or get paid less. It's just simply saying, you know, judged on market value, market driven, that they're able to actually use that in negotiation, whether it's with their performance rights organizations, the ASCAPs, the BMIs, the CSACs of the world are able to do that for them or the artists themselves. There's change coming to this industry anyway. We've had two of these groups, ASCAP and BMI, who have been under consent orders for years that basically said this is all you can do and this is the only amount you can charge. And that was coming under it's the longest unregulated, for the most part, consent order that's ever been. The Justice Department is looking at that now. So I think you're looking at it from a perspective of simply saying, let's make this process fair. Let's look at the economic incentives on both sides. You would want Pandora's in the digital music, which we have great respect for. They're disruptive technologies that have moved us greatly along in this process. But you also they would not want to have government interference in them saying how much they could grow or how much they could charge. So I think it's just it's an issue of fairness, and that's what we've portrayed this as.
Have you counted noses yet as far as potential passage might be, and have you talked to the administration about how they feel about it?
The administration at this point is an overall look. I think there's not been a lot of interaction at this point because we're looking at how this bill would actually move with Congressman Chairman Goodlatte. We've got good bipartisan support. Hakeem Jeffries, Congressman from New York, and he was my Democratic lead co-sponsor on this issue. We've gotten good bipartisan support across the aisle. As with any piece of legislation, any change in the status quo, you're going to have those that are affected by that status quo wanting to make sure that they're not, left out or they're included. And we're continuing those conversations. But I think at this point, everyone knows the system is broken. And I think issues such as Taylor Swift and some of the other artists and performers who have spoke out on this have gave new life to it, especially when you go looking forward. We're not by no means wanting to discourage digital innovation or even the new disruptors of how we receive music, but we're also wanting to make sure that you're looking after the very thing that causes them to exist in the start.
Congressman Collins, are you a songwriter? Just curious.
No, I'm not. I did write a song last year with a couple of really great songwriters in Nashville that we wrote about this issue, and it was sort of a promotional issue with the bill from last Congress, and that was fun. It was really an investment. For me, this comes as just an attitude of fairness and also the understanding from my background in life, being an attorney, also being a pastor, a chaplain, and a salesperson even. What I sold in life was my ability to communicate really what is not tangible ideas. And I think that we've got to get into an understanding in our culture today that just because it's on the internet or just because you can stream something, that the value is any less than someone who makes a widget or makes a car or a product. The intellectual property has inherent value. It has inherent property rights in and of itself within the Constitution. And I think those are the things that we're trying to emphasize, that nothing truly is for free. And that I believe good copyright protection, good music licensing protection, this is the kind of thing that actually creates an environment for more creativity and does not detract from it.
Congressman, shifting gears here, the House Budget Committee, which is chaired by one of your Georgia colleagues, Congressman Tom Price, produced its proposal yesterday for fiscal year 2016. And one of the key assumptions of that is a repeal of the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. How realistic is that, not only because the president would likely veto that, but just because you've had hundreds of thousands of people now signing up for Obamacare who might lose coverage under this. So is one of the basic premises of the bill unrealistic?
I don't think it's unrealistic. I think it's what we have been talking about for ever since the monstrosity was put into place. And even though it's already in place and people have, you know, many times have been forced to it, one of the things that's often underreported is talking about private employers who were not supposed to be affected by this, quote, Obamacare legislation. It was only for those who do not have health insurance have lost their coverage from their private employer because their private employer chose to not offer it anymore and put people onto this. So I think the issue that we need to deal with is looking at the cost assumptions here. The president, there's a case coming up that will be decided in June, the King v. Burwell case, which really I think hinges a great deal of what I believe is a run around the law of itself and the administration not even taking into account what the law actually says. So there's a lot of dysfunction within the Affordable Care Act to start with. I think this is a step from the perspective that's not new from the Republican Party, but also is one that we move forward and say let's work toward a patient-centered approach to overhauling our medical system instead of a government-centered.
But the Republicans themselves, I mean, they have been fighting the Affordable Care Act for years and have said, okay, we can come up with a plan, and yet the GOP itself has not been able to agree on a single alternative, have they?
Well, I think there's been several plans out there, all, again, going toward the Dr. Price is a classic example who has a plan that, again, looks at the things that we can work on, whether it's be insurance coverage, protection of care, lawsuit protection, other things like that, that actually work. And we were already, one of the things that's always mentioned about the Affordable Care Act is because it was one of the, quote, benefits that started it, was the coverage of pre-existing conditions. What was not told to the American people, or at least explained to the American people, is that was already being done through some existing Medicaid. In fact, our current Governor Nathan Deal, while he was a congressman, actually worked on those high-risk pools that were providing those kind of coverages for those who had those pre-existing conditions. And it did not involve a government takeover of how we do and how the basis of our healthcare system goes.
But we had a lot of people who were simply unable to afford insurance, and aren't we seeing that now, albeit gradually, partly because of the bad startup of the of the website, but aren't we seeing now many more folks who did not have insurance who now do have it?
But even on those even the projections of those who have signed up, many of which, and the interesting, if you look at it, the numbers that are putting on how many are on the Affordable Care Act now, many of which were actually on private employers' insurances before going to the Affordable Care Act provisions or the federal provisions. And one of the things that is also projected by others as well is the fact that there are people who will not be covered or more losing their coverage long term in this issue. So I think that, you know, the bottom line is nobody ever thought the president would not, you know, would be effective at changing the Affordable Care Act legislation. He signed seven pieces of legislation that have made substantive changes to the act. I think there's nothing new here as far as from our Republican standpoint on what we view as a better way to do it.
We're talking to Congressman Doug Collins, a Republican from Northeast Georgia. When we come back, we'll have a couple of more minutes with the congressman, and we'll take another look, or actually a further look, a closer look, if you will, at the Republican budget plan for fiscal 2016. This is A Closer Look on 90.1 WABE with Rose Scott. I'm Dennis O'Hare. And by the way, Congressman, both of us promise not to sing during the next few moments.
And I won't either.
Okay, we'll be right back.
You're listening to A Closer Look. I'm Rose Scott. Alongside Dennis O'Hare, we're talking to Georgia Republican Congressman Doug Collins. Congressman Collins, I want to pick back up with the conversation you were having with Dennis, because you're live here on A Closer Look. You have a lot of people listening, perhaps people that, you know, have voted for you. What do you say to nearly 500,000 Georgians who have signed up for Obamacare? And although it's debatable whether or not the costs are going up or down, but from what we hear, the costs are going down. What do you say to them when you want to be a part of repealing the Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act? That's
well,
a lot of people that will depend on that health care.
Well, and again, a lot of the increase in those who are covered, those who have actually purchased plans through the federal exchange, the question I would have is, you know, Rose, I turn the question around. If in the essence of some of those which we found out up here were dental plans as well, they were actually counted in those who actually got health plans. But the question is turned around. Why should, you know, we were actually able to work and make changes that would allow for affordable plans, allow for those who couldn't get coverage to make coverage, instead of it becoming a government-run plan in which really, and let's take it out of the current, let's look long term. And we've talked about this, I've talked about this before. The long term goals here, and especially when you look at it from the expansion of the Medicaid expansion, you look at the other issues that are dealing with, you're looking at what is perceived as the carrot up front with, quote, no cost to the state being taken back over the state, and many of these states cannot afford it, in which in turn they'll just simply say we can't do it, which turns it more into a federal system. There are better ways to look at this. We have a healthcare system in a country that is second to none. You can look at it from around the world perspective. And one of the things is just simply from a cost perspective, well, part of the reason for cost perspective over the last couple of years is there's been such uncertainty in the market on what is actually going to happen here, especially over the last few years. So I think it's just a matter of we believe there's a better way to do it and cover people at the same time and not do so by being deceptive to the American people.
Congressman Collins, have you ever been poor? Have you ever had to take a sick child or sick parent to the emergency room because that's what you use as your health care, as your primary
physician? I'm going to also, at this point, I'm also going to take great umbrage with the question, and I'm going to take
that's
it
fine.
In this perspective with this, because the implication is if I've never been anything other than what I'm talking about, I can't understand the issue and the problem. And the issue from my perspective is, yes, I mean, from a perspective of wondering where am I going to, at point in time when we were young and married, where is our, rent check coming, making sure that we're living on a budget, which the government does not live on, whether we're actually spending money efficiently, which is what we have to do in a government, and understanding as a pastor, as I have had with many of my own congregation, knowing the trials and tribulations that they go through, I think right now what is very frankly not helpful in this debate is determining if I or somebody is the classification of poor to understand the ability that I believe that people inherently need to have better and that they need to be offered choices that give them the ability to make themselves better and to have those choices not come from a government that forces them to do that.
But if
and I think, no, no,
majority,
you asked the question, so I'm going to answer the question. You asked the question.
That's
you
okay,
asked the question.
Congressman Collins, relax. You good.
No, because I think the question here was not being truthful to your listeners. And I think what we've got to understand here is also one of the things is for those that we have never cut off the alternative for people who want to use the emergency room. In fact, what was really interesting is in a completely random study that was not a study, it was a way that was put forth in discussing healthcare and how we do it, is in Oregon, which was a random sample of giving coverage, state healthcare coverage to those who in the state, what they were looking for is if people had healthcare coverage, would their dependency or less dependency on emergency room or looking at the care system that they were currently in. What they found was is those who were actually given health care to do it, quote, the way that many believe it should happen, actually increase their use of emergency rooms. What we've got to do is we've got to focus on a health care system in this country that focuses on preventive medicine, focuses on getting those who have long-term chronic illnesses, using the incentives to do so instead of procedural pay, and looking at quality of care. And I think those are the issues that get crowded here, not in the sense of pitting one person against another on who should get care. And everybody is valuable in the sight of God. Everybody has the ability and should have the ability to be helped when they need it. The question is how are we going to do that from a governmental perspective with taxpayer dollars?
Congressman Collins, I just want to just back before we move on here. The implication, though, is that for people in underserved communities, regardless of color, regardless of whether it's inner city, rural, when you talk about emergency rooms, when we know for a long time that that is the only time some people get to a doctor, and for individuals who don't even have dental or vision or whatever, if that is their only means for getting health care, I think hospitals will tell you then that's a burden on them. That's the only question I was throwing out at you in terms of
let me finish.
Understanding the plight of the underserved in this country. That's all.
Well, I appreciate that because I appreciate, the question of understanding the plight of the underserved when I have three hospitals in my area that are rural hospitals that are and so I understand. So that's why maybe you understand why I there's different ways to go about helping what they do without understanding if I'm poor or not. So if there's another question there, I'll be happy to, you know, to answer those. But I do understand the fact of what my hospitals are going through, and I served in the Georgia legislature for 6 years while we dealt with these kind of issues.
Congressman, just as a way to wrap up, perhaps, on the Republican budget, House Budget Committee budget, to go to, I think, what both you and Rose are talking about, services and preventive care and so forth. Do you agree with the estimates of some folks that the Budget Committee plan would cut about $900 billion from Medicaid? And if that is the case, then what is the alternative for folks who might lose coverage by that amount?
I think at this point in time, and the budget hearing is going on right now, determining some of the other numbers, the what we call the non-mandatory or discretionary spending, the numbers that we're looking at, again, is looking at how we can help states and the federal government deal with the health care issue. The numbers that Dr. Price is putting out there, as you know, and frankly, from a physician standpoint, he may be head of the budget committee, but as a physician, looking at the real issues of cost and health care, I think those are going to be first and foremost on quality of care and access to care, that we can keep those who trust and need to find those solutions real. I think that's the question, is how we deal with the long-term fiscal implications of what we do. And I think that is the sometimes gets lost in the argument, because we're looking at trying to right a fiscal ship that right now is completely broken, that no personal family budget or even business budget or even a government budget can withstand. And so I think those are the questions that we're trying to answer now. Dr. Price is, in effect, in committee as we speak, and we'll see how those numbers turn out in the end.
Congressman Doug Collins, who is a Republican from Northeast Georgia. Congressman, thanks very much for giving us this time. We really appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Y'all have a great day.
Thank you, Congressman.
Too.